iHeart Podcasts.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
All right, so the other day you and I were talking about albums that we wanted to buy or like movies we wanted to watch as kids, but you know, these were the ones that our parents weren't so sure about. They were a little nervous about letting us have them.
So I think my favorite was that you begged to go buy the DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince album with what was it? It was Parents Just Don't Understand that was on
Parents
it.
Parents just don't understand. They still don't, to be honest with you.
It's such a tame song. I love that you had to beg for it. But like, I'm totally in the same boat because like my mom didn't let me watch Silver Spoons for some reason. Apparently she didn't like the fact that like he would just cause all this trouble and then it was resolved with like a sorry in the last 2 minutes or something.
That's pretty hilarious. Well, there was another one that was my begging and finally getting to be Bart Simpson for Halloween. I think this was fifth grade. It might have been sixth grade, but I know it was around there. But
really?
I'm sure I was one of millions of kids running around in that same ridiculously heavy and pretty much suffocating rubber Bart mask saying things like don't have a cow man and eat my shorts and all the great Bart lines.
That is so funny. I had no idea you were Bart Simpson for Halloween.
I was.
It is funny like how shocking Bart was in those early years. Like I remember some kid wore a shirt in and I think it said like, who the hell are you? And a teacher put masking tape over the hell part.
Yep.
Such a badass.
Well, I mean, who knew that more than 25 years since then, The Simpsons would still be going so strong on TV? I mean, it's, of course, now the longest running scripted primetime series in American history, currently in its 30th season, recently passing 650 episodes. So, you know, this puts it past Gunsmoke, which ran for, I think, 635, but it's just incredible.
Yeah, you know, I saw this thing in Entertainment Weekly that said something about how, like, The Simpsons were so off-putting to America initially, mm-hmm. and now they're one of the longest-going, like, church families, like, on
TV. Really?
Yeah,
but
it is funny to think that it spun off from the Tracy Ullman show, and it wasn't even the original idea that the producers of the Ullman show approached Matt Groening about, right?
Yeah, no, they'd originally actually approached him about his Life in Hell comic strip, but, you know, he didn't want to have to give up the rights to that, or at least to the characters, mm-hmm. and so he decided to come up with a new concept and a completely different cast of characters. And it's funny because most of them were based on and even named after the people in his own life, like mainly his family members.
Well, I mean, it was a smart call to go in that direction.
No kidding. Well, thinking about this spinoff made us want to revisit some of the most successful or maybe the most bizarre TV spinoffs in TV history. So that's exactly what we're doing today. Let's dive in. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hatikader. And on the other side of the soundproof glass, not just wearing a Mork from Ork t-shirt, but fully dressed in the costume that Mork always wore, that's our friend and producer, Tristan McNeil.
You know, I always appreciated his commitment to these costumes, but it's pretty clear that the show was like from before his time, mm-hmm. and he's not seen an episode because like everything he responds to is just Nanu Nanu, which is kind of ridiculous.
Do you think he thinks that's all Mork said or what?
I think so.
Yeah. All right, well, Tristan's a busy guy, so I guess we'll cut him a little bit of slack now. And anyway, let's come back to the topic of Mork later, because that's actually one of my facts for today. And today, of course, we're talking about TV spinoffs. Now, it's easy to think that this is a much more recent phenomenon, but we can actually look way back to like the 1950s, when a show like The Honeymooners would spin off from a variety series called Cavalcade of Stars. Huh. And this is really one of the first big sitcoms in America, so spinoffs are definitely not a new thing. But anyway, where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, why don't we talk about one of the most prolific spin-off machines in TV history, and that is Happy Days.
Good start.
You know, most people don't remember this, but Happy Days itself was weirdly a spin-off. It was from a show in the late 60s and early 70s called Love American Style. So during the run of that show, the TV producer, Gary Marshall, had this idea for a sitcom about teenagers in the 1950s. And he made a pilot, he shopped it around, but unfortunately, no one was biting. So he ended up selling the rights to the pilot to be an episode on Love American Style. And actually, two big things happened here. First off, George Lucas saw Ron Howard in this pilot, and he asked him to be in his film American Graffiti. And then ABC executives took notice. And, you know, when you fast forward a couple of years with American Graffiti, the musical Grease had come out, and like those both being such big hits, like it was clear that 50s nostalgia was this super sellable thing. So yeah. They went back to Gary Marshall and they said, about that pilot, like we'd love to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to think how different TV history would have been if Happy Days had never been on the air. Because, you know, as you had said before, so many shows spun off from it. I was actually looking at the list and I didn't even remember some of them, but there were at least 5 live action spinoffs and I think 3 cartoon series, all that spun off from Happy Days.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I know I was setting you up to talk about Mork and Mindy, but I do feel like we should mention the first and most successful of the Happy Days spinoffs.
Oh, that would be Laverne and Shirley, right?
Exactly, Laverne and Shirley. So Laverne, who was played by Penny Marshall, and Shirley, who was played by Cindy Williams, they both showed up in the season 3 of Happy Days as friends of the Fonz. And within just a year, they actually had their own show. It was a spinoff that was so successful that it hit the top of the charts, and it often outperformed Happy Days during the run when both shows were on. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The show actually lasted 8 years, but there was also a weird animated spinoff from that that most people don't remember. It's called Laverne and Shirley in the Army, where, as you might imagine, the duo enlists in the military. They serve under the command of a talking pig named Sergeant Squealy. And shockingly, that show did not get a second season.
That is so weird. But actually, yeah. I don't know if it's weirder than Mork and Mindy. And thanks for the setup on this one. But, you know, the history of this one is one that many people may not remember or even know. And this can actually be traced back to the Dick Van Dyke Show. So in this one episode, Dick Van Dyke's character is watching a sci-fi movie, and he then dreams that this alien named Kolak, I think it is trying to take over the Earth with walnuts or something like that. And so here's where the Happy Days part comes in. So the director of that episode was a guy named Jerry Paris, who ended up directing several episodes of Happy Days years later. Well, one day he's on the set, and Gary Marshall starts talking about his son and how he's obsessed with Star Wars and how he wishes there were more aliens on TV. And so this makes Paris remember the whole walnut aliens thing, and he decides to pitch a similar idea. And from that, Mork from Ork was born.
That's really crazy. I do feel like we could do a whole show on Happy Days spinoffs, but since we've only got 9 facts here, I think we should talk about another one. So since I shared 2 of the first off the bat, like I feel like maybe you should take another stab at a fact here.
Yeah, I think I'll go with another powerhouse spinoff machine, and that's, of course, All in the Family. Now, this legendary series about the Bunker family actually led to 6 spinoffs over its 9 seasons. And a few of them were very successful. There's, of course, Maude and Good Times. And I thought about sharing some facts about that one. But, you know, the biggest hit was obviously The Jeffersons, debuted in 1975. And, of course, focused on the former neighbors of the Bunkers, which were George and Louise Jefferson.
So, you know, I had definitely watched The Jeffersons a little bit when I was a kid. But I remember seeing Sherman Helmsley on David Letterman, and you know, he's the guy who played George Jefferson, if mm-hmm. you're listening and weren't familiar with the show. But, you know, what I didn't realize was it was on the air for a really long time, right? Like, they were talking about it, and it was a stunning amount of time that show continued.
Yeah, it was actually on longer than the show that inspired it. It was on for 11 seasons, 253 episodes. It's actually second only to Tyler Perry's House of Pain in terms of the longest running American sitcom TV shows that have a majority African American cast. So it was a pretty incredible run. And actually, interestingly, Sherman Helmsley's last acting job was on an episode of House of Pain. He appeared as George Jefferson on that episode.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay, so I know we've talked a good bit about successful spinoffs of legendary shows, but there's actually one that I had totally forgotten about, or maybe I blocked it out because it was a colossal flop, and that is Golden Palace.
I don't even know what that is.
It's the follow-up to Golden Girls, which, you know, was one of our friend Adam's favorite shows. He loved mm-hmm. all the ladies, and I feel like he could give you words to live by from each of them. But
that's right.
If you remember, the show ended after 7 seasons with Bea Arthur's character Dorothy getting married and moving to Atlanta. So the spinoff apparently followed Rose, Blanche, and Sophia as they moved to Miami and then tried to run a really nice motel there. I guess the gimmick was that they invested in this place. They ended up having to get involved in the day-to-day work because things go wrong. And,
right.
you know, as I mentioned earlier, the show was not a success. It only lasted one season.
It's so weird because I have no memory of that. But I do feel like if you're going to talk about spinoffs from the Golden Girls, you do have to talk about the one successful spinoff from the show.
I know, Empty Nest.
That's
it's
right.
The best. Well, that show actually followed the lives of the girls' neighbors and also ran seven seasons. And all of the Golden Girls appeared multiple times on the show. But here's something I had no memory of, and this goes back to Golden Palace, but that's that Don Cheadle was actually the manager of the hotel on that Golden Palace show.
Huh.
It's kind of a shame because he got typecast. He was later the hotel manager in Hotel Rwanda, which is totally different.
Maybe that was his training, right? To be ready for that one?
I think so. But what do you have next, Will?
All right. Well, I wanted to talk about a show whose creative team actually didn't intend for it to be a spinoff. And this one sounds weird when you hear about it because it's Frasier, which seems like such an obvious one. But in fact, this was one of the many things about Dr. Frasier Crane that were not intended to be long term. So his first appearance was on Cheers in its third season. And he was really just meant to be this temporary character, but fans fell in love with him. And so by the fifth season, he was pretty much a regular cast member. So you fast forward to the creative team working on a show concept for Kelsey Grammer to kind of do as his next project. And they were worried about the show always being compared to Cheers. And so they actually didn't want to make the show about Frasier for that reason. And instead, they had this plan for him to play some sort of like magazine media mogul, and he'd been paralyzed after some sort of accident.
What?
Yeah, it's a very different concept, but the studio wasn't having any of this idea, and they insisted that the show be a spinoff. And you can actually still tell that this was scaring the creative team, so they did as much as they could to separate it. I mean, starting with moving the character all the way across the country to Seattle from Boston. But that said, most of the major cast members did appear on the show at some point during its 11 seasons.
Well, Frasier was definitely one of the most successful spinoffs ever, but we've got two more facts to get to. Before we get to those, let's take a quick break. Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're talking about TV spinoffs. Okay, well, what is your last fact of the day going to be?
All right, well, I started with one animated series that made parents uncomfortable, and I think I'll end with another one that made them even more uncomfortable. And I've talked, of course, about Beavis and Butthead, which I spent many middle school hours watching and thinking was just hilarious. And I actually never forget going to the movie that they eventually did. And just as the lights were getting darker after the previews, kind of indicating the movie was about to start, it seemed like the entire crowd immediately went into their best Beavis and Butthead impressions. It was just such a weird experience.
That sounds like incredible for the time and like a nightmare as well.
Yeah. It was exactly both of those. But what a lot of people don't remember is that Beavis and Butthead was actually a spinoff in itself. So it came out of this anthology show called Liquid Television, which featured all these different animated segments. And it was also on MTV and, you know, was by far the most successful creation to come from that series. So it was eventually spun off as its own thing. And it was such a stupid, but, you know, I have to say, wonderful show running for eight seasons. But, of course, it spun off another show.
Daria?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Daria actually wasn't part of the original Liquid Television series. I mean, she was actually added to Beavis and Butthead at the request of MTV. And this is because they wanted kind of more of a female presence on the show.
Sure.
So as Mike Judge explained, he created a character that was kind of this mix of Darlene from Roseanne, which you can definitely see, but also a high school girlfriend of his. And the name Daria came from someone he knew in high school, apparently somebody that he used to call Diarrhea, which sounds about right when you think about Beavis and Butthead.
Yes.
Also a reminder of how horrible high school students can be. But anyway, it's Megan, what's your last fact of the day?
Well, I think I'm going to end the show with a show that wasn't really a spinoff, but could have been considered a spinoff maybe for like a weird and funny reason. And this is the relationship of The Office to Parks and Rec. So if you go back to the peak of The Office's popularity, NBC asked the showrunner Greg Daniels and the writer Michael Schur for some spinoff ideas. And they'd actually already been kind of hatching on this. Like, at first, there was the possibility of a show with Jim and Pam. But then, of course, they didn't want to take their two most popular characters off the show. And they also thought about Dwight and his family Beet Farm, which I would have loved. I would have watched that show. They actually did make an episode about exactly that a few years later, but it never turned into a spinoff. But ultimately, Daniels and Schur decided they would go and do just a totally different mockumentary. One thing I loved is that there was actually this idea of how to connect the two shows. And it was the idea of the writer Paul Lieberstein, who plays Toby on The Office. Mm-hmm. But here's how TV Guide described it. Quote, "On The Office, a copy machine breaks, and throughout the episode, a repairman tries to fix it. At the end of the episode, the machine is loaded on a truck and refurbished in a warehouse. Then the copier is loaded onto another truck and taken to Pawnee, Indiana, where it's dropped off in the Parks and Rec office." So in a twist on spinoff traditions, the character spun off would have been the copy machine. But producers briefly considered the idea, but ultimately Parks and Rec was its own creation.
That is hilarious. I mean, I'm not sure why they wouldn't just go with this idea, but I love that. Anyway, it takes a lot of guts to talk about a spinoff that's not really a spinoff and to even close the show with it, Mango. So for just that bravery, I'm going to give you the trophy today.
And I mean, I know that we have a thing for copy machines. Back at Mental Floss, our machine was called Sade because she was such a smooth operator. But I'll happily grab the trophy this week. Anyway, there are so many great and weird spinoffs out there, from the Perfect Strangers Family Matters connection to the MASH follow-up, which was called After MASH. But if you've got a terrible favorite spinoff, tell us all about it at parttimegenius@howstuffworks.com. We'd love to talk about it. And from Tristan, Gabe, Will, and me, thank you so much for listening.